Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. And this is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majority for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much more you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hopefully go pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator's screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. The unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the remedy and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so very much for providing us with this disclaimer. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our Monday night call with GW. It's all about correcting your status. Why would you correct your status? Well, let's start with a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. The year was 1901. The case before him, or them, was Downs versus Bidwell, 182 U.S. 244. And he said in a dissenting opinion, quote, "The idea prevails with some, indeed, it has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of the restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to." I will take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of the majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government will result. We will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, into an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution. I hope you heard that. Two governments operating. If you look up the definition United States in Black's Law Dictionary, whether it's the first, second, or third, through the sixth edition, it will tell you the United States has this definition. There's three of them, three definitions. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. You do realize that a sovereign is not a citizen. You cannot be a sovereign and also be a citizen. You are either one or the other. There is no such word in law as a sovereign citizen. The second definition, it may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. And the third definition, it may be the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. So what does all that mean?
Take the first one.
It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. This is referencing what was quoted in Scott v. Sanford. It was referencing We the People, quote, who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states, became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them, it was for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to the citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles on which it was founded. That's the first definition. Do you have family that extends all the way back to the 1750s? Are you a direct descendant of someone who had boots on the ground in the 1750s who fought against King George III? Do you know that? If you are, you're a co-sovereign amongst sovereigns by this first definition. This is law. It's not hysteria. It's not theater. It's not politics. It's the law. Second definition. It may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. These persons are United States citizens and are, as said in a court case, classified as property and a franchise of the federal government as an individual entity. Reference the 14th Amendment with a democratic form of government. Have you ever heard we must make this world safe for democracy? But don't we have a constitutional republic? The third definition. It may be the collective names of the states, which are united by and under the Constitution. These people are, quoting an older IRS W-8 Ben form that refers to Union State citizens on the, it's the term American national. You can find it in the United States Code at Title 8, Section 1502. And herein you'll find a guaranteed Republican form of government. What's all this about? I'm going to share with you. Cross versus Board of Supervisors. This is 1966, 221A, 2nd, 431. Quote, both before and after the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution, it has not been necessary for a person to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a citizen of his state. And where did this come from? Cruikshank. The case Cruikshank. So I'm sharing this with you because you need to understand that your birthright, in some instances, and, well, in both, yeah, in all instances, your birthright has been hijacked by the United States government knowingly, willingly, and intentionally to put you into a place where they can deal with you as governments of the world are accustomed to dealing with their citizens. And that is by placing you in the position of a United States citizen. How do they do that? Well, in the first place, when you were born, a birth certificate was generated. That birth certificate was sent to your state for your state's vital statistics. It proved you were a state citizen. Definition number three. Vital statistics of your state then forwarded that information to the State Department of the United States, where they knowingly, willingly, and intentionally filed you in the category of a United States citizen. Now, in the beginning, this doesn't harm you in any way, shape, or form. You're a minor, okay, and you're doing things. Or does it really just have any effect on you, even as a minor? Well, I think it does. There's a court case. See if I can find it real quick. It says... just hold on a second. Here it is, Wadley versus Newhall. This is a circuit court, North District, California, March 13, 1905. Quote, civil rights under the 14th Amendment are for federal citizens and not state citizens. Federal citizens, as parents, have no right to the custody of their infant children except subject to the paramount right of the state. How is that possible? It's possible because your parents began at an age where they asked permission of the government to do things, to drive a car, to go hunting, to go fishing. All of these resulted in licenses, driver's licenses, hunting licenses, fishing licenses. Then they asked the government if they could get married, and a marriage license developed. When the marriage license was crafted, the state became a partner between the husband and the wife. And as a partner, it held a superior position to the relationship between the husband and the wife. It also took full control of the children. And then the process is repeated as the children get older. They ask for permission to drive the car. They ask for permission to go hunt and fish. And all of this is prima facie evidence of your desire to be a United States citizen as opposed to a Union State citizen. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to GW to get into it and mix it up a bit. Go ahead, GW.
Let's mix it up. Yeah, that sounds good. All right. Great job there, Michael. And with your normal, very detailed explanation of things here as far as citizenship, that's pretty cool. Hope everybody is doing well tonight. Lots of drama, man. Just driving into my community, I was had to pull over because right in front of me there was a car that just had hit one of my friend's vans and pushed it up against the wall. And this poor girl, she was not in a good place, driving her dad's car. I think it was either dad or grandpa. And everybody's screaming at her, and I was there just like, good night, you know. They didn't want to talk to her, only talked to the cops. I'm talking to her. Anyway, almost. I had to videotape it for a little while just to get some evidence, and wish I could have spent more time with my friend there. But anyway, had to get on this call because this is important. And so want to give you a little bit of a conversation that happened this last week. And I was put on the phone to by one of my clients that I've had for quite some time. He's in Georgia, and he does some pretty, well, creative stuff with banks and things like what he calls medium-term notes and things like that. Anyway, he was bringing forward a gentleman that he's dealing with that he wants to see get structured when he receives his big blessing. And so he's just putting him on with me to do the introduction and everything, and he's talking about getting the structure done and you know, the becoming a national and things like this and correcting your status. And the guy got him, you know, he was on the line and we were talking, and he said actually that he had become a national. Oh, I'm a national. He says, I'm a national. And he says, and he started to explain to me how he did it, operated that way for a couple years, and then he had to reverse it and rescind everything. And I said, wait a minute, hold on, put the brakes on here. You owe me a little bit of a more of an explanation. What the heck are you talking about? Now, he explained that the process that these gurus that set him into this place had him basically rescind his birth certificate. Okay. Then they had him rescind his Social Security card administration card. Then they had him rescind his, what he was calling the Sister K Trust, and take the license plates and the tags off of his vehicle, and he was already in the process of trying to get the MSO for it. And he said he operated that way, but he goes, I couldn't operate in that way anymore. And I was like, oh yeah, I kind of understand. And on top of that, this is a man in Georgia, a black man in Georgia. Can you imagine the extra ordinary kind of attention and undue drama that would create? Okay. In that environment, I was like, holy shnikes, man. I said, listen, that has nothing to do with what we do when we correct somebody's status through the State Department, the United States, you know, the U.S. State Department. And I was explaining it to him. I was doing it over about a 20-minute period where I was explaining all these things. And about that point where I was kind of wrapping it up, I was giving him the short, basic version. The guy jumped in on the line and said, yeah, I'm on board. That's what I want. I thought, yeah, I kind of figured you would. He said, yeah, that. And I was thinking, you know, there's so much misinformation out there and so much stuff that we have to deal with almost on a daily basis, a weekly basis, with these other types of gurus or people that are in a position to try to lead other people what they think is the right thing to do. And it becomes a very, very excruciating, debilitating process. That's why I love the term that I think Judge Bernie says it the best, you know, a peaceful solution. Okay. The types of things that he puts out are a peaceful solution to and a remedy to escaping certain things and avoiding certain things. And what we have with this process also with correcting your status is a very peaceful solution. Okay. It really doesn't involve any of the drama. And by the time you get through this, hopefully you're trained in a way enough and will also digest and comprehend some of the things that Brother John, who's extremely knowledgeable and gifted and talented in the arena of really understanding these things from a judicial standpoint, and philosophy that are available, recordings that are available that Michael can make sure that you have, okay, to listen to when encountering, okay, officials, especially in a stop with your private conveyance or motor vehicle, whatever you want to call it, okay. When we are talking about this process, we're talking about doing some very limited things that correct your record with the highest office in the land that has to do with your citizenship. And that's, of course, the U.S. State Department. There's no other department that has higher authority. And that's top down. okay, information in their system where you want it corrected. Okay, to make a long story short. And so, you know, with that said, you know, we do it, of course, as you've probably heard in this phone call before, we do it through the use of properly filled out and attested to affidavits that are placed at the State Department and also in an interview that happens with the actual acquiring and securing of a brand new passport that has that information uploaded onto it as it goes forward. And that's really the critical place that you want it. You want it in a place where they can look at it on the back screen. If one of the administrators is looking up your information, whether it be a ticket agent or where you go through customs there, the agent that is going to be you're going to hand your passport to. Those type of people are really the critical people that you want to see the information that's different about you and sets you apart from the average citizen who is a U.S. citizen. That's where it really gets critical. That's where you want it. Nothing on the face of the card or the face of the passport is really going to have any real detailed information that's going to be super accurate where you can find where, you know, it's been corrected. And that's on purpose. Okay, because they don't really want to put it out into the public with something that can be identified by just handing it to your neighbor, your friend, you know, or sitting there at the bar and you know, trying to impress somebody. Okay, it's really made for when you're in a critical place where you're dealing with someone that can either detain you, arrest you, okay, or set you free. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's why I'm having this, I have a kind of an ongoing situation with, people that are dealing with and also directly, plenipotentiary judge, Russell J. Gould and his correct parte syntax grammar, people, not quite getting it. And understanding that, listen, whether you want to believe it or not, if you're flying on an airplane, if you're operating something that has four wheels on it, you know, traveling down the road, do you want to argue and be right, okay, with all of your paperwork and different things? If you do, listen, more power to you. You know, that's cool. I appreciate it, and I actually honor and respect people that are doing that, okay, getting the claim of the life together and all these things. But we got a much simpler process and very proven track record of helping people to attain something that they really want to attain in this system we're working in. And the system that we're working in, even though, yes, we are categories, most of us that are on this call, I'm sure, and I know Michael and Brother John, myself, and most everybody I talk to would categorize themselves as a citizen of the kingdom of heaven, okay? We're having this human experience here on earth. And we have to deal and to be able to navigate in the system, even if it's corrupt, that they've put together, okay, that they understand. And that's what we're really helping, you know, what I like is that, and I bring this up quite often because I just love scripture and I love talking about scripture no matter where I go. You know, God, our Father, the Creator, that gave us His Word, okay, and gave us the ultimate instruction manual in the form of many, many, many books, okay, 66 that are contained there, and there's others too that are actually mentioned in those 66 books, by the way, such as the Book of Jasher, the Book of Enoch, the Book of the Kings. There's a number of different things that are great reads if you can comprehend that. Our Creator said in His Word that He would always provide us a way of escape. That the system that is really controlled by the evil one and their minions, okay, they're the ones that tempt us. Okay, God never tempts, neither can be tempted. But it says, but with the temptation provides a way of escape. And it's really contingent upon us as researchers and truth seekers and seekers of His Word and to be in a place of continually searching out these remedies that are put in place. And so we've actually identified a number of them, and we've dedicated our lives to trying to help other people identify them too and to be able to pass through in this life with less consternation from the commanding crazy authority situation out there. And part of the bedrock process, part of the starting of that process, is really to understand first you need your status corrected spiritually, okay, with the kingdom of heaven. That's the utmost thing you want to do in your life. And then after that, there's a way to walk out here on earth. Okay, there's other things. There's ways of, like our Messiah said, okay, I come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And that life that we can have more abundantly is a process of sanctification, and that process of sanctification does not end at just reading Scripture. It's what our Father said in Hosea. He said, my people, and He's talking about His own people. He says, my people are being destroyed for lack of knowledge. And so we're trying to help bring some of that knowledge. You know, there's no way that we can bring all that knowledge. You know, I'm not an expert on all knowledge. I know none of us are, but as a team and as, you know, the people that are working within this community, okay, Michael's community especially, have a real substantial grip on a number of those things that our Father talks about as being the lack of knowledge. Some of those things, and we bring them up. So anyway, having said that, I will yield to Michael and or Martin, whoever's on the call here, to open it up for further discussion and questions from the audience.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 to raise your hand. We're going to start with Dexter. Gosh, every time I hear that name, I remember that show, Dexter. I was a fan of that show. Yes, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good, Michael. That was a good show. They should actually have people like that, in my opinion.
Yep.
I have a question for GW.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my question is, okay, so when I filled out my paperwork, it was originally filled out with a different state's address than what my actual DS-11 was filled out recently, because this process is about ready to wind up. But I've moved to another state because I got married. Now, I have not gotten that state's ID. I still have the state's ID that I originally have when I started the process. Do I need to have the actual state ID that I'm actually living in now that I...
No.
Okay.
No. No. No, it won't make any difference at all.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I just didn't want any red flags being thrown up.
Okay. I noticed that I did get an email from Michael, I think it was on that question, and it said that somehow some aunt got in there and changed the address or something.
Yeah, she thought she was doing me a favor, and I told her, I said, listen, I got some legal proceedings that are in the process. Just leave everything like it is, and once that's done, I'll fix everything. And she didn't understand and didn't do what she was supposed to do.
Well, let me ask you this question. On the was that on the affidavit or the DS-11?
No, she actually changed the address at the post office. So she filled out my information.
She filled out your information for what?
For a change of address.
Oh, just a okay. So she filled out the for a change of address. Okay, so she didn't have anything to do with your DS-11 or your affidavit.
No. No, the affidavit started out.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. Not a problem at all.
Okay.
Nope. Not a problem.
All right, good.
Next.
Well, that's good. So that was a lot simpler than I was anticipating. Good. Appreciate you taking my question.
Not a problem, Dexter.
All right, thank you so very much.
All right, I'll
mute. Gentlemen, press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Otherwise, we're going to have a very, very short call, and we don't want to do that. That's not fun. Press star 2 on your keypad. Those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side, center right in your monitor. Left-click into that rectangle, type away your comment or question. Underneath the rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Once you have filled that out, hit submit, and it will pop up on my end, and I'll be glad to give voice to your comment or your question. Again, press star 2 on your keypad. We don't have anybody with their hands raised. We're going to go home early. We don't want to do that because we're going to have too much fun. I suppose we could tossle some things up and go back to how some people are. In fact, I had a conversation this week. See, this is Monday, so the end of last week, I had a conversation with a gentleman. I told him, you know, what we do, the cost involved, et cetera. And he really got insulted that, you know, we were charging $5,000 to walk you through this process, provide the support, et cetera, and make certain that it is done absolutely perfectly correct. And I tried to share with him that, yes, you're absolutely correct. There are other people on the Internet that offer these products, so they say are these products, and for very, very little money. They're also getting their students, if you would, killed. And, of course, the perfect example was a couple of 3 weeks ago in Wyoming or Utah, wherever it was, where a student of David Strait, cocky as could be, thinking he can waltz around Matilda without having anybody concerned, was pulled over by police. And with a very, very bad and arrogant attitude, proceeded to tell them off, basically. You can't do this, you can't do that, etc. And then, stupidly, his gun was exposed on the floor.
No, on his hip.
And he didn't tell.
On
his
hip.
It was on his hip?
On his right.
I thought it was on
his right.
I thought it was on the floor.
No, hold on. It was on his right hip.
Somebody yells gun. The next thing you got 43 rounds from 7 or 8 different officers going off all in quick succession. Sound like a drum roll, please. The important thing is that in this process that we offer, we hold your hand from beginning to end. We encourage you to be on these calls. to ask questions. You have my direct number. Talk to me, and we'll get the questions answered privately during the week if that's what you want. All right. Anyways, Bruce has raised his hand. Thank you, Bruce. Is this out of kindness, or do you really have a question?
No, I actually really had a question. Actually, a comment and a question.
Okay.
So I think one of your best selling – so this is the comment. One of your best selling stories should be this unfortunate young man that was well ventilated by police.
Yeah.
So that should scare the bejeebers out of everyone who would think, oh, this makes me Billy Badass with the cops. No, it doesn't. As you've explained many times, you have to be respectful and move slow and keep your hands where they can see them and all that kind of thing, because every cop knows when they strap their gun on in the morning and go out that they might not come home that night. So they're on high alert, and we do everything possible to not make them get, not make them feel not at peace. So that was my comment on that. And every time you tell that story, I'm like,
good comment.
It could have gone so much better.
Yeah.
With just the attitude with which you use our tools, so to speak. But the question was, are you aware of anyone that actually has an image of what happens when they run your card, or are we still waiting for somebody to get that? And I know one of my buddies down in Central Texas thought he would be able to do that in the near future, but have we seen that yet?
We've not seen that yet.
It's a little bit of a conundrum, okay, for the cop or the administrator that's running that to document that, because
all that
documentation can lead right back to the officer or the administrator and get them fired.
Okay.
Yeah, so
basically you'd have to have a friend who is LEO that says, hey, pull me over for running this stop sign.
Yeah.
And so that gives him probable cause, and then he can do it.
It does.
Say, well, hey, look at this, but I'm not sure they're allowed to let anybody look at their screen or – take a picture of
right.
it.
Right.
And
stop,
then the other
right there.
The other question
Wait a
would
hey,
be
everybody stop right there. You said probable cause. No, sir. Probable cause only is engaged upon a crime. It's not a crime to run a stop sign. It's not a crime to do 100 miles an hour in a 70 mile an hour zone. It's an infraction. Because it's an infraction, there is no such thing as probable cause associated to it.
Okay.
Because it's an infraction. I just want to interrupt. I have – it's like when somebody says to me, well, thank you for that advice. I go, no. I did not give you advice. I just shared with you what I might do where I similarly situated.
No. That's a legal definition, so I appreciate that. So I guess the question would be if, hey, follow me around the block and pull me over, or whatever. But I guess that's what we're waiting on. The other question is, I've heard people on the call say that they came through customs with no problem. Do they have a picture of what it showed? I mean, even on the system where you put your Trusted Traveler card in, you can take a picture of the screen. It says, proceed or whatever it does. I haven't done it in a couple of years, but I have the Trusted Traveler card for a long time and have never had any problems with it. So that was a question.
Maybe you could be the first.
Do we know what the machine says when you're trying to come back in the country with our passport card?
I'm sure people do. See, I've never done it. I've got a ton of clients who've done it, but
generally,
I've never done it.
Most of us have not wanted to travel out of the country for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I'm about to going to do that this summer. So.
Okay. Well, maybe you can document the whole experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will.
You know, if you could prearrange an associate of yours to position themselves with one of those Nikon telephoto lens behind the agent to where they get a good zoom-in picture of the screen, and when you approach the counter.
If he can do that, I'm sure he will.
All right. Anything else, Bruce?
No, sir. Thank you for your time, and as always, appreciate the information.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, next is Sam. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, I can document back to like 1500s when my family got here. I have war rosters for being called up to the militia to fight the British. So what does that do for me exactly? Or is that just title, or is there something that does for me? As far as status and
yeah, Michael, like, you better right. answer it, Michael, because I'm telling him it doesn't, you know, you could tell that all day long to somebody that you're passing through the customs or you're being pulled over alongside the road and you could just show them all the identification and documentation, you know, not identification but documentation for that. But if your status is not corrected.
Right.
What do you think that's going to get you?
Nothing.
I sent to the State Department of the United States a year ago not only the affidavit that we've generated to give to the State Department, but I added to it a declaration of birthright. Because if you remember at the opening of this call, I was quoting I think it was Cruikshank, where we talked about the birthright that this was entitled to those who were here with boots on the ground back at that time.
Right.
I don't know the effect of it because it also says that we were first state citizens and we joined and became this new membership in this new political body. I'd have to go back and open it up to give you the exact quote again. But the point being is that a sovereign is above the law. If Queen Elizabeth had murdered somebody, she's not charged with murder. She may be forced to abdicate the throne, but she's not charged with murder because she is the law.
Yeah.
It's a monarchy. So does that get you any more at Starbucks plus $5 and a cup of coffee? I don't know. But from a personal
point. I lay odds on it.
Yeah, really. But from a personal point of satisfaction, I have a family history that also I've traced back. In fact, before 1662, when my people came over from Scotland, I've got a written record of our family that goes all the way back to the 1200s. Just after the Norman conquest.
Yeah, that's where my family went from being Norwegian to being English was in there. Okay, yeah. So maybe it's something that I could just throw in my trust binder. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it means something to me. You know, just like being a member of the church.
That's good.
Yeah. And those are the things I'm looking to do in my separation from what they are and who I am. So,
sure.
Okay, that's all I had.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Dexter has returned.
Yeah, I do. With my job, I have to fly quite a bit sometimes. And when I give them my new ID,
are they going to, you know, grab TSA and put me in a little room and start giving me the third degree, ask me why I have this kind of ID and not an actual state ID?
Let GW answer that one.
Huh? Say that again. When you – I missed the first part. You said
okay,
when
I
you
said,
do this process?
Yeah, after the process is done and I've got the different type of ID and the different citizenship.
Are they going to put you in a room and give you the and grill you? Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's the good news. Okay. No, never heard it happening to anybody. If anything, they treat you a whole lot better.
Oh, okay.
Because for one thing, here's the thing. For one thing, that state that travel card, which comes from the State Department, okay, that we teach to people to use in what most people to refer to as the United States, okay, and we like to say that. In the several states or the union states, and that's all the states of the union, okay, traveling around in your private conveyance or your automobile, whatever you choose to call it, that card doesn't look anything different than anything else that you would have either previously, okay, and it won't look different afterwards, okay? The passport looks the same as any other passport that comes from a 14th Amendment citizen or a passport you've had before. It's only when it's run and the official's looking at it that it separates you and it says, do not arrest, do not detain, do not search. So do you actually think they're going to they're going to disregard the statement? Okay, the orders, you could say, from the U.S. State Department that they're an employee of and take you into a room and grill you? that would be a direct violation of the State Department's rules and everything else because these people get trained in how to handle all different kinds of situations. Part of their training is not real super, super long or anything else, but they know how to handle, okay, someone that is classified in that place of do not detain, do not search, do not arrest. They know automatically that individual is classified more like a diplomat or ambassador, okay. And they get a pretty short course on that. It's called hands off.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well,
so,
I was just curious.
Okay. Yep. Nope. Now, if you're carrying one of our competing, okay, gurus out there, if you're carrying one of their plastic cards that is made up by one of their local assemblies, okay, printed by them, I would say probably.
Now, would that be what, when you're saying assembly, are you talking about the state assemblies?
Yeah, like Audubon rights people. Yeah.
Yeah. A friend of mine started talking to me about something to do with the joining the state assemblies last week, and I said, okay, yeah. I didn't know anything about it. One other quick question. As far as being able to buy a firearm in a state or carry a pistol for protection, does that fall underneath
this
type of ID as well?
Puts you, absolutely, it puts you in a much better light, okay? And some people have stated this, has been stated over and over again by different people. Okay, and there's lots of different testimonies of, you know, of people once they get their card, once they get their passport, their corrupted passport, okay, and they go through the process much easier. Okay, there's even people saying, now this is this is not been identified, you know, with absolute, you know, like somebody took a picture, okay, but over and over again this happens, okay, where it actually will state on the record if they dig deeper, okay, that it will actually say that this person has a lifetime concealed carry permit.
Okay. All right. Because the other day I was wanting to buy a gun and they wouldn't even let me look at it because I didn't have the
ID.
State ID for that state along with some kind of special training.
So let me tell you on that issue. Okay. Whatever state you choose to put down as your home address where your abode is. Okay. And it's issued your card. Okay. Your passport card or your passport, which they will take as identification at gun shops. Okay. Either one of those better have the state that you have put down. Okay. You can't just do it in one state. Okay. That's the one thing when purchasing a firearm, okay, that's going to be a little that makes it a little tougher. It's not like this just gives you carte blanche just to go anywhere, okay. It's still tied to the actual state, okay.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, then that brings me to my second question, because the state that I'm in now is not really pro-gun friendly, but the state that I had actually started the process in and where I have my actual ID still, I'm wondering if I should leave that as my state.
I would. Because you can – see, here's the thing. You can leave that as your state. Like I would have, you know, the affidavit and also the DS-11 filled out with that state address that's the one that you want to go to and get the gun at, I would have it filled out that way, okay, so that when they do run it, they're going to see that you're part of that state. Because here's the other thing about the passport card. Using it anywhere as far as travel doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Okay.
So if you're a little strategic in the way that you're thinking about this, you might want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael, sounds like we'll have to redo that last paper for me then.
Whatever it takes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, GW, and thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Three bags full. Next is Anna Maria. Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. GW, since I did receive my travel card, that's the only identification I use when I go anywhere, actually, but especially airports. And I was just wondering what might be happening because I do not go through the big scanning unit, and so they do pat me down. They give me a full pat down, and they do go through my stuff. So I haven't been treated any differently. What do you think that might be, I guess?
I'm not sure.
You know, I can't even can I ask them what they see on the screen when I go up there, or?
Sure, you can. Yeah.
Because I would think if it's coming up there, why wouldn't they tell the other the people up front? Or maybe they don't realize that I'm not going to go through the unit and they're going to pat me down. Maybe they don't say anything to the people that are the TSA people, you know, the person that you give your ID to.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. I mean, that's most likely what it is. Yep. Most likely.
Okay, I think next time I'm going to say to her, I just do not go through the machine and see if they do anything differently.
Mm-hmm. That'd be good. You could just ask them, what do you see there? Does it say search or don't search?
Okay. All right. Definitely. Definitely will. The other thing I wanted to share with you, about 2 months ago, I do not recall where I was, but there was it was in the DMV. A police officer was sitting there. And I said, I'm just curious, I'm an American national, and I have my passport card, but when I asked the officer to run it, he said he couldn't do it. Is that true? I don't understand that. He said, well, we here in Florida, I don't know if it's different in other states, but they use different equipment. He said, we used to be able to scan other cards and identification other than a license, but it didn't work very well. So we do not have that system anymore. They're coming out with another kind of system. So I don't know if, you see from other people that, they tell me they can't scan the card. That it really is true.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe in Florida, things have changed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
for myself, if I were pulled over by a law enforcement officer here in Florida, I would present them with that, and they'll say, well, where's your driver's license? And I'll say, officer, all I know is that the representative from the State Department said that this was, Vera ID or Verify ID, whatever it is, the national thing that came out April a year ago or whatever it was, validated ID. And this is all I have. So if you can't operate with this, I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
That's all I'd say. I don't want any controversy with you. This is what I have. It's the real ID. It's what's called the real ID. This is the real ID from the Real ID Act. It's from the State Department of the United States. It's what I have. I can't offer you anything else. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right.
Bruce is back. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yep, the real ID that you just mentioned, that's the little, if you have a Texas driver's license or a Texas state ID, it's got the star on it on the top right corner next to where it has your class of license. It's a little like silhouette of a gold star, little round insignia. And that was the real ID law that you mentioned that I think has been in effect for about a year.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, sir?
That was all.
Thank you kindly. And drum roll, please. Brother Kent, love to have your questions.
Good evening, folks. Can you hear me okay?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Good. Okay, thank you. Greg, you were talking before about keeping this simple and how other people get involved with rescinding the birth certificate, the Social Security card, they get into the SESTA-KB trust, et cetera. Bernie has talked about some of this on his call. Could you kindly differentiate for us what that goes to when you say that what you're doing with your process is correcting one's status? And I think you've indicated for the most part, and you'll please correct me if I'm misstating the facts, that you are satisfied with this level of status or whatever you might want to call that, standing, et cetera. So what would you classify the other things that you're talking about or mentioned previously and the things Bernie talks about, which I know you're familiar with, how would you classify them as to what they accomplish and what word, if there's any word in particular, would you attach to those various processes that are in addition to the status correction?
Okay. That whole process, I would say hit and miss, okay? Sometimes they hit it, sometimes they miss it. And it's a pretty dramatic thing, and it's pretty, I mean, there's not a lot of Bernies out there, okay? And Bernie will even tell you, he'll even tell you that, you know, he's done it successfully, but you've got to realize the way that he's arranged his life is very, very different than most people that are trying to accomplish it with what they're doing. That's the reason why this guy that I was talking about that said he became a national and to reverse it, reversed everything. Because, for one thing, he wasn't totally committed, okay? And another thing, like Bernie is, okay? Bernie is totally committed. I mean, it was do or die, all right?
I don't think there's any question about that with Bernie.
Yeah, no question. Now, the other people that he's had, okay, that he knows of, and he's told me, they have reversed it because they wanted to use the benefits of the system again. They didn't arrange their affairs, okay, so that they would be successful. Otherwise, they needed the Social Security benefits, okay? So why would you go and see, a lot of the gurus out there teaching that you need to disassociate yourself with every contract out there. Now, it seems to have logic to it. It seems to have a lot of, it's like, wow, yeah, okay, well, let's disassociate ourselves from every contract, which, you know, I mean, in a perfect world, that'd be really good. The problem is that some people have not, that have totally worked in the system, never been able to save enough money for retirement, okay, don't have the funds. They come back and rely on the, Social Security, okay, just in their later years, just to be able to survive, to be able to, you know, just barely have a roof overhead and, you know, get enough food. And you know, so that's something that if you're going to take that on, okay, you need to really be thinking about how you're structuring your affairs in the future. You know, I mean, I'm kind of, even though I've never disassociated myself permanently, okay, I mean, I got out of that system back in 1984, okay? I mean, you calculate my age and calculate what's going on, you can see, well, Greg, you better not go and try to ever rely on the Social Security system to do anything with, and I'm not. Okay, that's me personally. Okay, I'm not trying to promote that to anybody. But I could, you know, there's a lot of people that it would scare them to death to think that they need to, after all the years that they've been a W-2 worker or whatever, 1099, I don't care what it is, and been, you know, hoodwinked by the system, whatever you want to say, and they paid into it, and then think about giving it all up, okay, and disassociating themselves from that, okay, without having any attachment to it whatsoever. That's a pretty stark reality.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I wanted to get to the point as to what you're speaking of when you talk about change. You're pretty specific about the word status and what you're changing, and you don't
correct him. Correcting, Kent. It's not changing. I'm correcting.
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Okay. Correcting one's status. But you're using the word status.
Actually, to take it to the nth degree, what you're correcting is their record of your status.
Yes. Here you go.
You're right again. Two mistakes, one right after the other I made.
Go to the corner, put your nose in the corner, and you've got 15
minutes. Put your nose in the corner. There you go.
But I'm still going to pursue, even though I made those errors or mistakes, I'm still going to pursue my question.
All right. Can you hold your question for 1 second, Kent? Because I need to, I sense
sure.
that I really need to explain something here to the listeners who just heard this conversation between you and GW. GW's process of correcting your status, the record of your status with the State Department, does in no way affect any VA benefits, Social Security, or anything else. Those are contracts. It does not affect them. Okay? What they were talking about was something different. It's actually a separation from you and the United States. Bernie calls it a peaceful withdrawal. He also calls it something else. I forget. But point being is that this is not
strategic
that.
Strategic withdrawal.
This is not that. This is something totally different. Just want to make certain that none of you are sitting there going, "Oh, I can't give up my Social Security." You don't have to. You don't. You're not giving it up. You're not asked to. It's got nothing to do with it. Just want to clarify that.
Yeah. And what I was trying to say in Kent, during the first part of the conversation where I was talking about the man who said he became a national and then had to reverse it all, okay, he had gone through the process of trying to do that, okay, trying to separate himself from all, you know, the Social Security, the CISK Trust, his birth certificate, you know, removing all the, you know, the license plate and tags from his vehicle, and having a real hard time of it. You know, it's like, wow.
Well, I wasn't trying to muddy the waters with my question, but I wanted to get to the point, and I get what you're saying about what Bernie calls it, a strategic withdrawal, a separation from the United States, whatever you might call it. I'm trying to get to the point, when you say you're correcting their records that they have regarding your status, which would be the correct way to say it, actually. Would you look to what Bernie is doing, just to use as an example, certainly other people have done this, as a more of a standing issue or a capacity issue or a character issue? In other words, how would you categorize the differences or the levels that people might get involved in as to where they want to go, depending on
okay.
their level of commitment, their financial status, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, the way I see it from my viewpoint, okay, is that for one thing, what do you want to achieve with what you're doing, okay? So most of the people that I deal with, that I talk to, are just like the gentleman that I was on that call with, and when I was explaining how we go about it, okay, with correcting your status with the State Department and the category that you're put into, that's when he broke in, when he got it. I'm on board. That's what I want to do, okay? They want to accomplish, you know, having them separated themselves from the class of citizen, okay, that can be totally managed by the United States. They really want that. They want their constitutional rights, their God-given constitutional rights secured, and they want to know that they're in a good place to be able to fight from that angle. That's why, by the way, that's why Brother John, okay, requires right now everybody that it has some pretty extreme situations that is brought to him, okay, not even extreme, even in the lower level issues. Brother John is requiring that the person either be in the process or already have corrected their status. Notice that John is not saying, I want you to disassociate yourself from every contract, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like this other gentleman did, okay? And John says that it puts you in so much of a better place for him to help so that you can get a remedy and you can win. So that mm-hmm. alone, that alone should be enough for most people to say, yeah, wait a minute, maybe that's probably the better place to be.
Yeah. Let me interrupt for 1 second here before Kent continues and GW continues to share with everyone. There's several new people on the call tonight. Welcome. You're hearing John mention, Bernie mentioned, and so forth. I want to share with you that the phone number and the PIN number and the website, freedomsradio.com, that you are here listening to this call, through this call. This is but one call that we have. We have one every night of the week. Tomorrow night, I invite you to come listen to John. John is the point of the spear with regards to litigation. And you need to hear him because you're going to have not a single or few nuggets. You're going to have a barrel load of nuggets dropped on you on every call to where you'll just be appreciative of what you're learning. And know that your remedy is in the law. And he'll show it to you. Always, your remedy is in the law. But standing, political citizenship status is key to you exercising and enjoying your remedy that's in the law. Wednesday night is a gentleman, we call him Herr Slevin, and he offers an LLC that is a commercial entity that is not required to pay taxes by the way it's assembled. And then, of course, Saturday is Bernie, Justice Beshear, who will share with you how to become in a place where you own nothing, but you control everything. Think Magnum P.I., living in a 20-bedroom mansion on 5 acres with its own beachfront on Hawaiian Islands, driving a Maserati or whatever it was. This is owning nothing, but controlling Ferrari. Everything. A Ferrari. Okay. Well, I'd rather have my Porsche 928.
Ferrari 308.
Okay. It was red.
Yes, it was. T-top.
So just know that every night of the week, Monday through Thursday and Saturday, we have calls on these issues. Friday night, it's a different PIN. Different PIN. So if you want to attend this, you need to get in touch with me. I'll give you the PIN. Same phone number, just a different PIN. We do scripture study if you're interested. So back to you, Kent. Thank you.
Okay. So, Greg, just to pursue this a little further, obviously we're way ahead of where we were, at least, you know, many people are way ahead of where they were 20 years ago trying to deal with these issues and be free, et cetera. But we've now come to the point where we have people that are now arguing about the difference between an American national and a step higher being a foreign national versus a step higher being a non-citizen national, et cetera. Can't really show you where this is all spelled out in the law, but, you know, this is what they claim. So now, in a lot of ways, people are splitting hairs, and it's going beyond just what the intent of most people is or what most people could understand about doing what you're saying with the correction of the status in the record.
People who are desperate to sell something will come up with all sorts of names.
What's in
the law is found at Title 8, Section 15, Ought 2 of the United States Code. It says it right there, American National. These other names that you're talking about, tell me where they are. Not you, but have them tell you where they are in the code, where it's explained.
Well, I already said, you know, they can't tell you. So I'm illustrating a point. So the point that I'm going to is when other terms are used, so you use status with this term, the correction of the records for the status, could we safely use the term standing or capacity or character, for example, or do you think that I'm asking Greg his opinion on this, or Mike, or do you think those terms could be set more to the point of what Bernie is doing in a more purist way? And I say that with the most respect. I'm not being critical of Bernie when I say in a purist way.
Yeah. So, okay, so status and standing, okay? If you don't have corrected status, you don't have standing. All right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you might have capacity, but it's like having a Tesla that only has 1 or 2% of a charge, okay? How good do you think you're going to, you know, get around town with, you know, 2% of a charge? Now, the batteries that the Tesla have capacity. They have full capacity. They're just not charged. All mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, it's like once you get your status, once you change your status, now you have standing. Okay.
Once you correct your status.
And yes, once you, I'm sorry, you have to use a proper term. Once you correct your status, now you have standing. Okay. And think of it this way. Think about how now you've corrected your status. You now have the standing, and now you get into a critical thing. All right, okay, real critical thing. Brother John comes in with to charge you up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a negative standpoint, but from a very positive standpoint. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All philosophy kind of breaks down, you know, at a certain point, but that I'm just using that. The whole thing about standing is you don't have standing unless your status is right.
Okay, so when Bernie takes a more purist attitude about separating himself from, to use, for example, Social Security, is he really getting into capacity and character, or would you not necessarily associate that terminology with what he's doing? And just basically say, look, he's separating himself from the United States.
I know. And Kent, to be honest with you, you know, we've had these conversations before on other times that we've talked on a broadcast here. And mm-hmm. I did say before, I don't really want to go into any more about, I don't think it's necessary to go over it because, for one thing, Bernie's a great friend and a great provider of what he does. His what he's brought on for, okay, with Michael and what he does is just unbelievable as far as his abilities and his recall and his capacity and comprehension of structures, trust, law, all that, okay. That's what he's brought in, by the way, from Michael and everybody else that I bring him in for. Now, the fact that he's done these other things, okay, is great. It's great for him, okay. But it's not necessarily something that I would promote because it's kind of a hard road. And I don't see the benefit in discussing this at length over and over again.
GW?
Okay, well, I have
three court cases I want to share with sure. Kent here and the group. And okay. I think these three court cases, if you ponder upon them, dwell upon, meditate on them, think about it, it's going to answer your questions. Houston versus Moore, it's 1820. Moore versus Illinois, it's 1852. Both of those prior to the Civil War. And then right after the Civil War, United States versus Cruikshank. Houston mm-hmm. versus Moore says, quote, every citizen of a state owes a double allegiance. He enjoys the protection and participates in the government of both the state and the United States, end quote. Mm-hmm. Then 32 years later, 1852, Moore versus Illinois, quote, every citizen of the United States is also a citizen of a state or a territory. Now, remember the definition of the United States? The second definition was someone subject to the United States, and the third definition was a state in union by and for the Constitution. I forget what it was, but it talks about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So it's one of the two. Okay? So every citizen of the United States is also the citizen of a state where you have rights and a territory where you have privileges. Those rights and privileges were my comments. He may be said to owe allegiance to two sovereigns and may, not shall, it says may, be liable to punishment for an infraction of the laws of either. Well, how do you delineate whether you're going to be held liable?
That's right.
Perfectly clear. Are you on United States land or are you on Union State land? Are you a United States citizen or are you a Union State citizen? That's going to determine that you may be liable or not. And then lastly, Cruikshank in 1876, quote, it is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protection from both. He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, and within their respective spheres must pay the penalties. Within their respective spheres. Again, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Are you on United States land or are you on Union State land? Are you a United States citizen or are you a Union State citizen?
That's right.
In return, he can demand protection from each, listen to this, within its own jurisdiction. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in Florida, and they're doing something to you that they only have a right to do if you're on United States land. What is United States land? All territories, possessions, and enclaves, plus Washington, D.C., 10 miles from the seat of power. Is Florida a territory of the United States? No. All right. Does that clear things up, Kent?
Well, it clears it up a little, but based on what Greg just said, you know, he doesn't feel that it's worth a lot of discussion. I'm not going to belabor it. What I am going to say for the record is that, you know, I don't know everybody that's on these calls, and all of us or all of the people that are on calls are at a different place, and there is no real call because Bernie doesn't want to discuss these things at length because he felt people, from what he said, have gotten hurt by, you know, following him or following what he said in his book, and then they really needed to get Social Security or something, to use one example, so they went back into the system. But I think that this should be presented in such a way that there may be other things out there that some of the people on this call may be interested in. So when I ask these types of questions, I'm not attempting to belabor a point or sell some kind of service or product here because I don't have anything to sell. I'm trying to get this to be discussed thoroughly as to what people's options are. So therefore,
okay,
I ask the kind of questions that I ask.
And you don't have to defend yourself. Nobody's attacking you. Bernie's process of a peaceful withdrawal is severing every connection with the state creation that we find in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, severing it completely. And the reason that that has been detrimental to many people is because they were not financially prepared to live in that society. When the event takes place, which is what I call the RV, the event, when the event takes place and people are wealthy beyond means where they need no assistance from the government whatsoever at any point in time other than to protect their liberty, which it was designed for to begin with, then they may very well choose to have their strategic withdrawal. And there'll be no reason, once they have properly arranged their affairs by creating the corporation soul and the various charitable religious trusts where they literally own nothing, they're poor as church mouse, they can take a vow of poverty, because everything is owned by the different trusts, which is managed by the corporation sole as a trustee, which they control. And that's the only circumstances where it really works. Otherwise, be prepared, at worst, to live on the street and beg for your food.
Well, Mike, let's just say this in closing. I mean, years ago, in this country and other places in the world, it's my understanding that when people fell on really hard times, they didn't have a government to run through to get Social Security or some other kind of handout, and their neighbors helped them.
The churches that helped them.
That's what I was going to say. The neighbors and the churches helped them. So, you know, we were living in a different situation. But, you know, I'll be interested in hearing as time goes on. I'll be interested in hearing, you know, and after they have the reval that takes place, whatever. I'm interested in hearing more about what Bernie has done and whether that's presented through, you know, Greg's call here or through Bernie's call. But I think it should be presented. And then let people decide for themselves, you know, with the appropriate caveat, just like you're doing now.
Yeah, you have to have your net in place where you can have fun on the high wire and have fun. And if you fall, no big deal, you've got your net.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't have the net that Bernie had helped in the past, and they fell on hard times, and they had to run back to the sweet tit of the United States government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for your answers and responses. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, as always. Again, I want to remind everyone about tomorrow night's call with John, Wednesday with Herr Slevin, and Bernie again on Saturday. GW. Oh, Charlie raised his hand, snuck in just under the wire, almost. Go ahead, Charlie.
quick question. I was writing down I got Houston versus Moore, 1820. Moore versus Illinois, 1852. What was the third one?
That was United States versus Cruikshank, Cruikshank. It's found at 92 U.S. 542, 551.
Okay. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
GW, any closing comments?
I think that's going to do us. Hopefully.
Check.
Yeah.
Go ahead. That's going to do us?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, GW, it's a pleasure. You gave a great call tonight. I want to share something with you. Bernie mm-hmm. is the information provider that consistently holds high numbers of attendees. Today, you fell only 10 people shy of his norm.
Mm.
So you're doing great in exciting the population. Those of you listening on this call, please invite other people to the call. Don't be shy. Hand out the phone number, the PIN, the time. Tell them to be there or be square. And that's for every call that we do. GW, thank you so much, sir, for your time tonight. And until tomorrow night, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.